When the art day gets rough, you just gotta keep on punching. And here's your Thunder Punch Daily with Jersey Drozd.
Hey, it's me, Jersey, and it's time for your Thunder Punch Daily, the show I record in my car, sharing a few thoughts from the mind of a cartoonist. And I thought I was going to get more of these Thunder Punches done this week. After all, these literally only take me about 15 to 20 minutes to make, I mean, between recording and post-production. But that's a sign of how what a nutty week I've been having in terms of a schedule. And without going into too much about it to, you know, start crying on everybody's shoulders. It's astonishing to me sometimes how even something as simple as a 20-minute block of time can be utterly unobtainable when you really start grinding at a lot of projects. I've got in the middle of the programming schedule for Kids Read Comics and some freelance work, teaching work. There's a lot going on right now, so I'm actually having to more inside baseball stuff, but I'm actually having to do this one towards the beginning of my day because I am committed to at least giving two of these a week, but I'd like to do more because I'm actually enjoying doing these. But topic of the day, let's talk about what we're going to think about today. This one is less of an inspired by my current workday thing, because as I said, at the beginning of my workday, but this one was just jotted down on my notes as something I was thinking about recently as I'm beginning to do the preliminary work on some new comics projects. And I think I told part of this story before on Past Art and Stories, but when I was first reimagining the front, As you know, the front started out as a series of mini comics that I was doing back in the 90s when I was in my early 20s. And then I found myself painted into a corner with the story because there was no story. I was faking it the entire time and hoping that I'd figure out what the story was as I went. And I don't say this to make fun of myself. I say this as I think it was a good experience because I got a lot of practice drawing and paneling and figuring out scenes. But I didn't have a story yet. And before I reimagined the story, this is like in 1998, 1999, so this is a few years before I really sat down and really wrote the story. I was trying to figure out what to do with it and how to reinvestigate this idea, look at it from a new angle. And I was talking with Tom Root at the time. Now, Tom Root, as a lot of you know, he was a writer that I was working with back then on some Anarchic Press projects, Ninja High School. Later on, the PPV miniseries. And then, yes, he went off and became a lot more successful than me and co-created Robot Chicken. But at the time, working with Tom, as I've said, it was a very rewarding experience because he taught me a lot about story. He, not in any kind of didactic, this is how you do it, Jers, but more of the in the process of just creating together. Because one of the things he was very gracious about is he let me be a full collaborator. I wasn't just his artist to bring all of his magnificent ideas to life. I was a co-creator in terms of the story, in terms of how the paneling worked and creating a lot of the characters. And there was a lot of back and forth, a lot of bouncing around of ideas between the two of us. So I always look back fondly on those creations. It was a lot of fun to work with him. And the learning happened when Tom would say things to me like, and this is something that I think ties into something, some of the past episodes like Kevin Cross's High Adventure Daily about trimming the fat, is I was trying to introduce these three characters into PPV that were based on three characters from the Transformers Robots in Disguise series. It was going to be a little tribute to the what were known as the Predacon brothers, Slapper, Gaskunk, and Darkscream. You trans fans know who I'm talking about. They were really funny to watch. And I wanted to create these three characters in PPV who would just be sideline characters who would appear, make a few jokes, and obliquely refer to Transformers Robots in Disguise. And Tom asked me, he said, what's that got to do with the story? What's it got to do with what we're trying to say with this thing? And I said, nothing, it's just funny. And Tom said to me very calmly, then it doesn't need to be there, does it? And then that was a little bit of a light bulb moment for me. But another light bulb moment, and this is the main topic for today, 5 minutes in already, is one of the go-to plots. I talked before in a past episode about how the chase is a good go-to mechanism because for various reasons it introduces your readers to the story in an effective way and it reveals things like data that you got to reveal about your story in a fun and compelling way. And another one that I learned from Tom was The Trap. And The Trap, where you create a situation for your heroes to get out of, short-term or long-term. And it creates a lot of interesting mechanisms for you to start building story ideas. And in the example of The Trap that I use from my personal experience is when to go back to where I was originally going with this this essay, is when I was reimagining the front, I said to Tom, okay, well, I don't know how I want to start this thing. I don't know where it should begin. And that's a classic rookie mistake, is you think that you always have to start at the beginning, when guys like Kirby come along and say, you can start in the middle, you know, start at the interesting point. And I was explaining to Tom all these different ideas I had for the story. And one of the ideas that I was kicking around was eventually killing off the character of Rex for various reasons, and probably inspired by a lot of Star Wars-y kind of stuff where, you know, you have Obi-Wan die so that Luke feels like it precipitates Luke's involvement in the rebellion and whatnot. And if Rex dies, then Thirsty's got to take his place, right? So that was an idea I was kicking around, but I wasn't really committed to it. And so after throwing all these ideas at Tom, Tom said, well, here's how you start your story. This is how you create a premise. He's like, okay, so Rex, he had it starting at the county fair, which is where I wanted to start my story originally. He's like, okay, so Rex, the Ferris wheel is about to fall down. Jared's shaking the Ferris wheel from page one of the front. Thirsty and Sam are falling, apparently to their deaths. And Rex throws his bow to save Thirsty. Like, his bow is this enchanted metal that grants its user semi-immortality and semi-invulnerability, superpowers, essentially. And so he means to throw it to Thirsty so Thirsty will be saved, and then Thirsty would thereby save Sam, and then Rex would die. And that'd be a dramatic moment. Oh, actually, no, I take it back. Yeah, no, that's how it was going to go, now that I think about it. But instead, Sam catches it. Sam, the love interest for Thirsty. So she catches it, and she saves Thirsty. So it's a mistake. And then Rex is dead, and Rex is the only one who knows how this bow works properly. So he's given this enchanted item, this Thor's hammer, as it were, to somebody who's unprepared, who hasn't been trained, who isn't aware of the full potential of this thing. But now she's got superpowers. And through this mystic union with the bow, she discovers what Rex's mission was to protect Thirsty from this oncoming threat, which is what became the full plot of the final graphic novel with Hook and the mercenaries and the Brigadier General after Thirsty for his powers because of what he could do with this alien metal in the long term with the big spaceship at the end, for those of you who have read the story. So Sam is now aware of that, but she doesn't know how she's going to do it. And what's more is she wasn't really interested in being Thirsty's girlfriend or even being a part of his life. But now she's stuck with him. She's got this enchanted device that has trapped her into a life of immortality. And the only way she can be released from this curse, as it were, is to save Thirsty from this impending doom kind of thing. So I think the line that Tom threw at me was the final line of the first issue to set up this premise is, she says, I don't like you, but I'm stuck with you. And then the story becomes an exploration of how do these two characters who don't like each other very much but feel an attraction to one another, how do they deal with being trapped in this sort of prophecy? Well, I decided not to do that in the end because I decided that part of the thesis for the front was going to be a refutation of prophecies. I hint at them in the story. I suggest that some people believe that this thing might be a prophecy, that it is, pre-foretold or whatever. Pre-foretold? That's a little redundant. Foretold. But ultimately, I wanted to leave that kind of thing in doubt, if a prophecy really can exist, because, you know, I personally, as the author, I'm a little itchy about the idea of prophecies and stories. I think it's a little bit of the God and the machine kind of thing. But anyway, that premise, Rex dies, now the guidance character is gone. The guidance character becomes this younger character who's unprepared. Now she's trapped into this scenario that she didn't ask for. And she is charged with protecting this guy that she's not even terribly comfortable with. That is a wonderful premise to start exploring characters, and it starts generating ideas for you, because now your premise is set. It's not a premise of an open-ended premise by comparison is three boys go off on a quest to seek a thing. You know, they're told there's treasure over those hills, and they're just, by gum, they're going to go get it. And now I'm going to put some obstacles in the way. Well, now you got a video game, okay? So, stage one, here's the mini-boss. Stage two, here's the mini-boss. Stage three, here's the mini-boss. They keep getting worse. And it becomes, it opens the door to become too linear in your storytelling. Whereas when you create a trap, you know, this is like right out of real life. You find yourself one day going, how did I get here? To quote the Talking Heads song. You find yourself working a job one day and you're like, how did it come to this? Not in a bad way. I mean, you can do this with like a happy sense of wonder too. But the trap becomes a way to very neatly introduce a premise where this character one moment was living a normal life, or, you know, they were in pursuit of some other goal, and now they're in a situation where they have to get out. And usually, in a lot of these stories, you'll find that they discover they don't want to get out after all. I think there was the Neil Simon play, No Exit, where you got the people trapped in hell. And it's just a room where you have all these different kinds of characters. And then at the end of the play, if I remember right, a door opens and everybody's afraid to leave because the fear of the unknown is worse than the horrors of hell. That's a variation on this idea of usually when they find themselves trapped in the situation, they grow into the situation. They become empowered to deal with the situation. And then it's not such a trap anymore. Then it just becomes a vocation for them. So that's one way of dealing with it, but I'm not going to go into all the different ways you can deal with it because that's up to you, the author. I'm just introducing this kind of premise of breaking it. Let's break it down conceptually. What are we talking about here? You take your character from one moment of normal existence. They have their preconceived notions of what life is about, and then you challenge that by putting them in a situation they're not prepared for, and you make that situation, construct it in such a way to that they can't get out. They can't get out without either losing honor, losing face, or create some kind of like actual mystical obstacle, like in the case of this magical bow that she'd be stuck with, that she can't release it. It's been bestowed upon her by accident, and now she's trapped in that situation. This is a classic thing. This is the greatest American hero, too. You know, he gets the super suit from Aliens and loses the instruction manual. Now he's stuck with it. Because he can give it away, but his sense of responsibility keeps him wearing it all the time. Or not all the time, but you know what I mean. He's stuck with the job. So that creates a nice succinct way to introduce your readers to your story, but it also creates a mechanism for you to say, okay, what happens next? How does this person deal with it? What are six struggles I can come up with where they are facing the frustrations of the new job that they have? Is there an opportunity for them to walk off the job, and what are the repercussions of that, and how do they come back to the job? It's a nice way to start just cranking out brainstorming ideas for future chapters, episodes, arcs for your characters. So think about that in the future if you're trying to come up with a story idea, trapping your characters somehow so they can't get out, and then watch them try to get out. It's fun, right? Okay, who am I? I'm Jersey. JDrows.com, Jersey on the Twitter, all that stuff. And we thank you for your support of the Art Story Supreme content. By the way, just with today's episode, I uploaded an old Thankcast. Had an interesting conversation with Brandon Dayton of BrandonDayton.com on the Twitters about the symbol systems of superheroes and secret identities. And it just so happens that a year ago this month, I did a lecture at the Ann Arbor District Library called Why Superheroes Communicate to Us. And I recorded it. I released it as a thank cast where it was available for any donation of any amount to the podcast. And it occurred to me, well, why are we not making these available to the Supreme Storyers? After all, you guys are providing monetary support for our efforts. So, yeah, I just posted that today. So if you go to artandstorypodcast.com, well, you're obviously there right now if you're listening to this in the little MP3 player on the site. You just go back one post or so, and that's there for you, too. It's about an hour. About an hour of really, ponderous academic discussion on how superheroes work. And if you want to give a listen to that and take the discussion into the forums, I'd love to talk with you about it. One last thing, if you are listening to this today, and that is April 17th, 2010, my office hours are coming up pretty soon. I made an announcement about that in the forum, so check that out in the Well, actually, if you're a Supreme Story or listening to this, you actually have full access to the announcements forum. So then I can tell you, it's today at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I'm going to be on Skype. The information on how to participate is in the forum. I'll be hanging out there for about an hour between 3 and 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. If you want to shoot the breeze about a project, about anything that you're wondering about in terms of being a cartoonist, I'll be glad to rap with you. Okay. Time for me to go. I'll be back soon with another Thunder Punch Daily. Until then, remember, everybody.
Hi. Today we met some people who had slept for over 200 years. Well, we don't need that much sleep, but it is important to get enough sleep. So here's some things to remember. Don't eat a lot before going to bed. A glass of milk or a piece of fruit makes a good bedtime snack. Try to go to bed at the same time every night and avoid any exercise or excitement before going to bed. Well, good night. Oh, good night, Cringer.